Of the Senate Finance Committee will please come to order. For the record, it's Thursday, February 9th, 2012, and let it be noted that we do have a quorum. Our first bill on the agenda today is Senate File 1527. It's Senator Dames's bill. It involves a commercial issue that's related to agriculture. Welcome, Senator Dames, to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman and members. I am here today to introduce Senate File 1527. Senate File 1527 is a bill for an act related to agriculture, providing for voluntary certification of good manufacturing practices for commercial feed and feed ingredients, authorizing fees for voluntary certification, modifying rule provisions relating to animal feed, appropriating money, and amending Minnesota Statutes 2010, Section 25.40, Subdivisions 1, 2, and by adding a subdivision proposing coding for a new law in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 25, repealing Minnesota Rules Parts 1510-2220 and 1510-2230. It is my assumption that the bill is in front of your committee due to the fiscal note, and the bill allows for the Department of Agriculture to charge their cost on site for the inspection, also their cost at the office to complete the inspection work and for mileage to and from the job site. So there will be the revenues will be offset by the cost, or the costs are offset by the revenues. So there will be an actual zero cost to the, there will be a zero cost because there will be the offset. I do have Mr. Knopf with me if we want, if there's some technical questions on the fiscal note. But with that said, I'll open it up for any questions.
Well, Senator Dames, these are the kinds of bills we'd like to see that have a zero fiscal impact, where if there are expenses, there's a fee always ready to cover it. So does anyone have any questions about the bill? Senator Hahn?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dames, I appreciate your being here this morning. Has this bill been heard in the Agriculture Committee?
Senator Hahn, yes, this bill has been heard in the Ag Committee and was bipartisanly passed there, and then it has been heard in state gov and bipartisanly passed there.
And Madam Chair and Senator Dames, the only reason I was asking is I just was reading through it quickly, and the definitions, for example, the definition of pest seems a little unusual, and I just wonder if that's, I'd understood that there had been in statute already definitions of some of those terms, or is this a new definition, or is this consistent with existing?
Senator Dames?
Could you refer to where you're?
I was looking at just on page one, letter C, the definition of pest. And okay. I just wondered if that was the standard definition or if this is a new definition.
If you don't mind, I'd like to ask Greta from the Department of Agriculture. Do you want to answer that?
I can answer that question.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Mr.
Knopf? Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, this definition of pest, it comes from the AFCO, or the kind of Association of Feed officers in the state. It basically comes from theirs, and this is only a temporary. If you notice the way this is structured, subdivision one, along with most of the subdivisions that determine how these inspections are going to occur, goes away once the federal government comes up with their process. But this is just taken. It's only for this purpose, and so in the pesticide chapter, pest would be something different. This is basically for feed only. So.
Are there any other questions? Senator Magnus?
Madam Chair, I move that the committee approve Senate File 1527 and send it to the floor.
Thank you, Senator Magnus, for the motion. Before we vote on it, though, I would like to ask if there's anyone who wants to testify for or against the bill. If not, Senator Magnus has moved that Senate File 1527 be recommended to pass and be sent to the floor. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion is approved and it will be sent to the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman and members.
Thank you. Our next bill on the agenda is House File 1467. Senator Hoffman is the author. And I will remind members that we had a lengthy hearing on this bill last session. And when it arrived in our committee last year, it did have a fiscal note attached to it. But once it was here, that provision that caused the expense was removed. And so It passed out of our committee, was sent to the floor, was not taken up on the floor last session. And so as a result of that, it was brought back to the last committee that it was heard in, and that's why it's here today. So there is not a fiscal note on this bill any longer. So it's almost a procedural move that we are undertaking here to move it back to the floor. But it always is automatically sent back if there's no action at the end of session to the committee where it was last heard. So with that, I'll let Senator Hoffman remind us what this bill is about.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Senate File 1357, is that right? Sorry. The numbers escape me some days, is a bill to strengthen our Personal Protection Act that we already have in statute. There's three provisions in the bill. There's emergency powers reform, which means the state is not able to confiscate lawfully possessed firearms during a state of emergency, and that only applies during a state of emergency. Number two, we strengthen the Castle Doctrine statute that we have, and that it helps us to stand our ground. It puts the onus on the criminal and not the victim. We should be able to be someplace lawfully and protect ourselves. And then number three, we have a universal provision, recognition provision, and that allows Minnesotans to defend themselves and their families around the country, and it will exercise our Second Amendment right to carry. And we can get into more detail if you think that's necessary. I do have an amendment, Madam Chair, the A4 amendment. I don't have my glasses on, so.
Could we have that amendment distributed? This looks like a technical amendment. The date last year was 2011, and of course that has come and gone. And so the proposal is to replace that with 2012.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Senator Perry.
Madam Chair, I've moved the A4 amendment.
It is the A4 amendment. Is there any discussion on the amendment? If not, all in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. Further discussion on the bill? Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Hoffman, I'm wondering if you're aware that quite recently, in the last 3 months, which is past the time that we heard it last year, that the New York Times did an article on Minnesota being the loosest state, basically, for giving guns back to violent felons. And the article is here. It was written by Michael Liu. I think it was September or October. The date, there's two articles that were in the New York Times, basically very embarrassing to the state of Minnesota as far as I'm concerned, that that law was changed about 10 years ago and made it much easier for felons to get their guns back, violent felons. And with that in mind, your bill suddenly becomes even more problematic than it was when it came out of here last year, because we're saying that people that have been violent felons in the past can now also basically shoot people anywhere that they feel threatened by someone. I'm wondering if if that's your intent, Senator Hoffman.
Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair, Senator Goodwin, I'm not aware of the New York Times article, and this bill doesn't protect violent felons in committing a crime. So I don't believe that this bill and that article are. I don't think that there's a relevance there. There's no protection in this bill for violent felons. I mean, if they're breaking the law, they don't have protection under the law. That's in current statute now, and this bill doesn't change that statute.
Madam Chair,
Senator Goodwin,
these two bills in combination, the current law that says that violent felons can just, as soon as they get out of prison, can go to a judge, find a favorable judge, and get their firearms back. Yes, sir, it does. I need you to read the law. And and actually, I'd be happy to hand out these articles if anybody wants to see them. But does your bill prevent restrict in any way, in addition to current law, or improve current law so that we can make sure that people that do have guns, violent felons, past convicted violent felons don't have guns that they can use anywhere to shoot somebody when they feel threatened.
Madam Chair, point of inquiry.
Senator Newman?
Just if you would help me here a little bit. This line of questioning, it seems to me, would be appropriate maybe in a policy committee or on the Senate floor. But this being the Finance Committee, I'm looking at a fiscal note, and I would have assumed that that's what we were going to be talking about, was the fiscal note and the financial impact of this bill on the state of Minnesota. And we are suddenly going right back into the weeds on the policy considerations. So I'm looking for direction from you, Madam Chair, as to what are we going to do here? Are we going to rehash this entire bill, or are we going to address the fiscal note? I assume that's why Mr. Turner is here, is to address the fiscal note. So that's my question, Madam Chair. What are your intentions here as to where we're going to go?
Well, thank you, Senator Newman. Your point is well taken. This is the Finance Committee, and it came back here basically on a procedural move, and we have no fiscal note. And so, Senator Goodwin, I understand your concern that you believe current law is not sufficient, but I don't understand if I don't think Senator Hoffman is necessarily dealing with that particular section of the law in her bill.
Madam Chair, yes, she is. There's a reference to that exact chapter in her bill. And besides that, is this bill going to the floor right from here?
Senator Goodwin, it will.
And
but
it has
been through the various policy committees. It had several hearings before it came here.
And I assumed that it was going to the floor. And with this new information, it casts a very different light on the bill that Senator Hoffman had heard last year. And when we find out that Minnesota is one of the loosest states in the nation for giving guns back to convicted violent offenders, then I do believe that's something that should be discussed in committee before it goes to the floor. So if you don't want to discuss it in this committee, then I would like to make a motion that we send this back to the Judiciary Committee and have this discussion there. Or we can have it on the floor, your choice.
Well, Senator Goodwin, it has been to the Judiciary Committee.
Not this year, Madam Chair.
That's correct. I believe that it could be had on the floor. The discussion could be had on the floor. I don't know if Senator Hoffman wants to attempt to answer that question here. I am not quite clear on the question. If you think that this bill is making it easier for felons to get guns back, but you're saying it already is easy for them.
Right. But what I'm saying is that this makes it easier for violent felons to defend themselves, past violent felons to defend themselves, maybe have a quicker trigger in defending themselves basically anywhere with a gun and be able to be not found, you know, guilty of a crime, even though they've had past criminal record as a violent felon. That this bill, from what I can see, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, does not address past violent felons under our current statute, which allows them to get guns back as soon as they get out of prison. Most states, I just have to say a couple things here. California, Florida, Texas, Montana, Wyoming all have tougher rules than we do on giving violent felons their weapons back. About 10 years ago, we had a situation where police officers were shot by a man that had gotten his gun rights back. At that time, we had a 10-year wait before they could get their, before they were allowed to have guns again. 10-year wait. And he got his back legally after 10 years. And he came through our neighborhood and shot a police officer that was walking home from work. That police officer was injured and went to an older lady's house, about 86 years old, and asked her to let him in. He had his civilian clothes on, and she did, and the man proceeded to shoot through her house. And police officers came from all over, Minneapolis, New Brighton, Coon Rapids, and in the end, five police officers were shot. The man had previously been convicted years before of shooting and killing his ex-wife and a man that was driving her home from work right in the head and killed them both. So we've got these situations now, and I've had calls from county attorneys since this article came out, because I did have a bill after that happened, because it happened in my district, to strengthen them and make them more like our laws on convicted felons, make it more like federal law. Well, instead what the NRA did, thank you NRA, behind our back, is go through and get the Senate and the House to I'd say basically sneak in a
Madam
provision
Chair.
That made it weaker at that
Madam
time.
Chair.
So,
point of parliamentary inquiry.
Senator Newman.
While I certainly respect Senator Goodwin's passion on this issue, again, I renew my objection that this is the incorrect committee to be debating this policy issue. I sit on judiciary. Senator Hoffman sits on judiciary. Senator Ingebretson sits on judiciary. And I will represent to you that I am not aware of any request by Senator Limmer to have this matter re-referred to his committee. Now, I believe on the Senate floor, once it gets there, if Senator Goodwin wishes to make an appropriate motion on the Senate floor to send it back to the Judiciary Committee, I think she has a right to do that. But again, this is not the correct committee to discuss these policy issues that Senator Goodwin is getting into. What I'd really like to hear from is Mr. Turner regarding the fiscal issue, which is under the proper purview of this committee.
Madam Chair, before that ends, I'd like to again make a motion that we send this back to Judiciary Committee.
On that motion, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To that motion, Senator Goodwin, I think, is confusing this bill with a more current piece of legislation that is coming from, and I don't remember the author's name, but the author is talking about the sale of confiscated weapons, and I think the article you're talking about relates to the criticism of the authorities of the way those things, those guns are sold back to federal firearms license dealers. And I think that's what the article is talking about that she's referring to. It has really nothing to do with this. There's nothing in here that says about anything about a felon getting a gun back. I think she's referring to a bill, and I think it's Senator Gazelka just introduced this bill to for sheriffs and chiefs to be able to sell guns back to the public.
Madam Chair,
Senator,
doesn't have anything to do with this bill.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, that is not true, and I'd be happy to hand this out so you can see. This is the article that talks about Minnesota's laws on allowing formerly convicted violent felons to get their guns back. And I know what I'm talking about here, and I would respect it if you would read this article and then talk to me about it, because it's quite embarrassing for the state of Minnesota.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, to the motion, this bill, and I just want confirmation, this bill has been to Judiciary, and they had a full hearing on it. I don't sit on that committee, but I'm assuming it was not a short hearing that they had last year on the bill. Have there, Senator Hoffman, mm-hmm. or Senator, Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, maybe you can say, have there been significant changes since Judiciary saw it last?
Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair, Senator Fischbach, no, there have been no changes. This is the bill that left the judiciary, or actually left this committee last year when we amended the provision that caused the fiscal note out of it. Otherwise, the bill is unchanged from judiciary.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair, I'm going to oppose the motion since judiciary's already seen it, hasn't had significant changes. There doesn't seem to be a reason to send this bill back to judiciary.
Senator Hand, did you want to speak? Senator Higgins?
My question was answered.
Okay. On Senator Goodwin's motion, my understanding from Senate counsel is the correct procedure to do this would be to actually have a motion to recommend the bill to pass, and then Senator Goodwin would make a motion to amend the motion to send it to judiciary.
Or she could just start by sending it to judiciary. Motion on the floor.
Senate, Mr. Bodden, you want to explain?
Madam Chair, there are several options, but the point would be a simple motion to send the bill to judiciary without any other recommendation would be out of order. Senator Goodwin could move to that the bill be sent to judiciary without recommendation at this time, that would be one proper motion. But simply sending it to judiciary without any other recommendation would be out of order.
So we will follow after we finish discussion. If there's any more question about the fiscal impact of the bill, then we will have the motion to move the bill to the floor, and then if Senator Goodwin wants to make a motion to send it to judiciary with no recommendation, that would be appropriate. So are there any other questions about the fiscal impact of the proposal? We do have a renewed fiscal note that came to us this year that shows zero impact. Any questions? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, if there are no further discussions on the fiscal impact, I move that Senate File 1357 be sent directly to the floor.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, we're working on a House file now, so it's House File 1467.
Okay, that House file.
Okay.
House File 1467. My mistake, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Mr. Bodden has found another very small technical amendment that we may want to incorporate in that motion.
Madam Chair and members, on page 6, line 17, there's one other reference to 2011 that can be updated to 2012. It's just the title provided for the act. So on page 6, line 17, delete 2011 and insert 2012.
So would you incorporate that with your motion,
yes,
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes, I would incorporate that with my motion, Madam Chair.
Senator Stump.
thank you, Madam Chair. Just to be clear, last year it had a fiscal note, and this year it doesn't. I mean, there is no fiscal cost this year. And the provision that prompted the fiscal cost last year has been removed from the bill? Mm-hmm.
That's correct, Senator Stumpf. When the bill came to us, the reason it came to us is because it had a fiscal note. While the bill was being heard in this committee, there was amendment to remove that part of the bill that that initiated the expense. And so it went to the floor, and now when it came back, just on a procedural move, because it wasn't taken up last session, it came back with a new fiscal note that showed no expense. And I realize you weren't on the committee last year, but we did have a lengthy hearing on the bill last year.
Madam Chair, one other question. Is there any local fiscal costs?
Is there local?
Mr. Turner, did you want to address that at all?
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf. No, there aren't any local costs. Last year, the fiscal impact was from reporting requirements requiring DHS to provide local law enforcement with civil commitment information and requiring the courts to provide law enforcement through the NCIC with diversion information. In the committee last May, those three provisions, Article 1, Sections 1, 2, and 5, were deleted. The note shows no anticipated local government costs.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I came in late and possibly I missed this, but on the bottom of page 1, we talk about the effective date of being for all permits issued August 2010, which then I see is August 2011 by amendment. But why are you going backwards to make something effective for something that happened half a year ago or more now?
And Senator Hoffman, do you want to address that? I don't know if that was included in the amendment.
The year change was in the amendment to go to August 1st, 2011.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
The dates are addressed in the amendment, the A4 amendment that we that,
yes. Madam Chair, I know that, but why is it not effective August 1st, 2012, period, instead of the four transferee permits issued last year?
So, Senator Higgins, you're talking about the last date on the page.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I'm talking about everything after on line 26 of the first page. Everything after this section is effective August 1st, 2011, which is now 2012 by amendment. Why is the other half, two-thirds of the sentence there?
Mr. Backus.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I believe that second date is there, the August 1, 2010, now 11, is because those transferee permits are valid for 1 year. So I think the idea was to look back at any of those permits that still could be valid so that the checks could be run on those permits.
Okay. Thank you. That's a good explanation. And then on 6/18 and 6/19, kind of the same question. Why do we have to have the last half of that sentence after the date? I mean, that's kind of overkill, so to speak.
Mr. Backus.
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, I guess I'd say that's kind of analogous to our common effective date for criminal provisions. There's what the effective date is, and then there's kind of the applicability, so that clarifies that it would be kind of prospective from that date. So if you have someone who maybe uses the force, who had used the force before August 11th and the case was still pending, it would just clarify that it would have to be after the effective date. It's kind of just an applicability provision.
Thank you. That's a great explanation. And then my last question, Madam Chair, is Senator Hoffman, when I heard this, whatever committee I heard this in last year, maybe it was this committee, I don't know.
Did hear it here. And are you on judiciary?
Not anymore, thank goodness. I had pointed out that it was written in very broad language, and you said you got this from the National Rifle Association, and they had written it, you know, to kind of apply broadly across many states. And I pointed out that the language was very unfamiliar to a lot of Minnesota statute, and asked whether you had taken the opportunity to have Mr. Backus or someone else in Senate counsel apply our writing standards and our use of language and that kind of thing to this. And have you done that?
Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, the bill went through the reviser's office, so I can only do what the revisers put into the language. And so what is in Minnesota language should have come through our reviser, and I would assume that it has.
Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Senator Hoffman, just a piece of advice. Use Senate counsel instead, because they're light years better in that kind of work, the detail that they put together. Our Senate counsel is second to none and way better than the revisers. Just a point for the future.
Thank you, Senator Higgins.
Thank you. Now we have Senator Ingebrigtsen's motion on the floor.
Don't hesitate, Madam Chair.
Do you have a motion? You have a substitute motion?
You want to amend that motion?
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Let's do the oral amendment and just make this cleaner. So we have the oral amendment to change the date on page 6,
line 17,
to 2012. All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. The motion is adopted. And then we have Senator Ingebrigtsen's motion to move House File 14, to recommend House File 1467 be recommended to pass as amended to the floor.
And Madam Chair, I'd like to.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you. I'd like to amend that motion to send the bill to Judiciary Committee without recommendation.
Okay. Any further discussion on that motion? Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, I am going to support Senator Goodwin's motion, and I'm going to do that because I would like, I don't think it's going to pass, but I would like to be on the record for wanting one more opportunity in a policy committee to have this bill be discussed. I know that law enforcement from the cities that I represent is greatly concerned about this bill. They've already met with me this year again to say if there's anything that could be done to turn the direction of this bill around, they would greatly appreciate it. So in keeping with that request, the only way that I know of for to have that happen would be to send it back to a policy committee and let those folks who are trained in this area and who are dealing with these kinds of issues day to day have one more chance to make their case and see if they can't do something to bring some consensus on this bill. So because of that, I am going to support Senator Goodwin's motion, knowing that, of course, we do just deal with the financial aspects in this committee.
Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call vote, too.
A roll call vote has been requested.
Madam Chair.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Out of deference to the Judiciary Committee, I did go down to Room 15 and speak with the chairman and told him that this was a likely motion, asked him if he had any interest in seeing this bill again, and his response was, I'll quote, "No, we're done. We've done our work." So just to let the committee know what the chairman thinks about that.
Okay, thank you, Senator Newman. The clerk will take the roll for the Senator Goodwin's amendment.
Senator Bonoff?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
Yes.
Senator Fischbach?
No.
Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator Hahn?
No.
Senator Higgins?
Yes.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
No.
Senator Langseth?
Yes.
Senator Magnus?
No.
Senator Newman?
No.
Senator Nienau?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Perry?
No.
Senator Stumpf?
No.
Senator Roebling?
No. On a vote of 5 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. So we still have Senator Ingebrigtsen's motion that House File 1467, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
Roll call, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. A roll call has been requested on that bill as well. The clerk will take the roll.
Senator Bonoff?
No.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Fischbach?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Hahn?
Yes.
Senator Higgins?
No.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Langseth?
No.
Senator Magnus?
Yes.
Senator Newman?
Yes.
Senator Nienau?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf?
Yes.
Chair Roebling?
Yes. On a vote of 10 ayes and 5 nays, the motion is approved, and the bill will be sent to the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Our next bill on the agenda is Senate File 1600. It is Senator Daley's bill. Welcome to our committee, Senator Daley.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
If you would like to proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, members. The reasons for bringing this bill forward stem primarily from the enormous fiscal challenges faced by our federal government. We currently have a federal deficit which continues to balloon and now exceeds $15 trillion and grows by over $1 trillion each year. From the numbers I have reviewed, this elevated spending began with a conservative in the White House and has become even more pronounced in the past 3 years. In 2010, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest-ranking military person in our country, said that our number one national security issue is not China or Iran, not Afghanistan or North Korea, but that our national debt was our number one national security issue. Before getting into the bill details, I'd like to cover two elements of background: events of 2011 at the federal level and our efforts here in Minnesota. Multiple times last year, the federal government came to the brink of spending crises. We faced the specter of a federal government shutdown with the continuing resolution fight in mid-March and again in early April. Right up to the August 2nd debt ceiling deadline, we witnessed more brinkmanship over federal spending and were perilously close to a default. A new continuing resolution was enacted October 5th. Congress passed yet another temporary spending measure on November 17th, because it was set to run out of money by midnight the next day. But instead of a one-year measure, it kept the federal government funded and open for just 1 month. Later in November, we watched as the super committee couldn't agree on a deficit reduction plan and sent no recommendations to Congress. Because of the current chronic federal-level spending crisis, their spending patterns, potential for cost shifting to the state, and related fiscal risks our state faces, it seems a prudent measure from a fiscal risk management point of view for us here at the state level to conduct proactive contingency planning. I'm glad to report the executive branch, with Governor Dayton, has already started to take those measures. Last summer, near the end of July, as the nation watched the debt ceiling debate and we grew dangerously close to a possible default, Governor Dayton directed his administration to examine the impact on state government if that ceiling was reached and wasn't increased. These initial efforts to conduct a strategic risk management assessment was a good first step, but it seems we need to do more. Yesterday, I met with several staff from MMB, and we seem to agree that one of our core competencies in state government is compliance risk management, but not so much experience in strategic risk management, which nearly all large organizations do conduct. So, members, I'd like to now turn to the bill. I have an author's amendment, and I don't know if it's the A1 or the A2.
A1. Senator Perry. A1.
Madam Chair, I'll move the author's amendment. It's the A1 amendment.
Madam Chair. It's attached to the bill. Senator Higgins.
Was this bill heard in any other committee?
No, it hasn't. It's pretty much strictly a finance issue.
So it wouldn't have gone to state departments? Because it deals with State Department finance?
Yeah. Mr. Bodden.
Madam Chair, the jurisdiction of the State Government Committee is related to the operations of the Department of Management and Budget. This is a new provision that will be coded in Chapter 16A, which is in the jurisdiction of the Finance Committee.
Just curious.
Senator Goodwin?
The State Government Committee also deals with 16A because that's state procurement laws. So I'm not sure why it wouldn't go there. I agree with Senator Higgins. Should have gone there.
Mr. Bodden said that the procurement law is 16C.
Correct.
Senator Cohen.
Madam Sheriff, I hate to speak in opposition to my colleagues, but as your predecessor, I think it's great that you just pull bills into the committee. I like to do that occasionally, too.
Disagreeing, Madam Chair. I just asked.
Senator Higgins was just getting clarification. We don't think we're doing anything wrong here.
No, and Madam Chair, seriously, I don't disagree that sometimes we would hear, I think the only person I'm going to guess who served in this committee longer than myself here would be Senator Langseth. And sometimes we would have finance committee bills without having the bills in divisions or now in the finance the policy and finance committees. So this would seem to be, if the chairman, Senator Perry, had wanted the bill, that might have been between you and Senator Perry, but it would not be inappropriate to have this bill in the committee.
Thank you. Senator Daley, do you want to explain the amendment, please?
I will. Yes, ma'am. Madam Chairman, Chairwoman. This removes the word insolvency. Excuse me. So that rather than focusing our discussion today on doomsday, Armageddon, fantasy, nuclear war, natural disaster scenarios, we can advance and enhance the pragmatic, strategic risk management efforts already begun by Governor Dayton. As you see in the bill, before I go into the bill, that's just as far as the amendment, so I'll just leave it right there. It replaces the word insolvency, and so that our discussion's not focused solely on insolvency, but it's focused on contingency risk management.
Are there any questions about Senator Daley's amendment as moved by Senator Perry?
Madam Chair.
So Senator Bana.
Not a question, but just a comment. Good job, Senator Daley. I think that was a wise move.
If there's no other questions on the amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Is there other discussion about the bill? And Senator Daley, would you address, we do have a fiscal note, and it is not showing any cost, although it is checked off in the box that there could be a cost, but the department chose not to put an actual figure on it. I think, and I don't know, I think someone's here from there, that if they want to explain, that they do see this as part of their ongoing work at the Department of MMB. And so, and I think they are working on it. So if someone would like to address that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michelle Weber. I'm a team leader in the budget operations section at Minnesota Management and Budget, and I worked on this fiscal note in consultation with some of our state agencies that receive significant amounts of federal funds. The reason that the table does not have costs indicated on it is because the agencies indicated that it would be existing staff efforts. So what the fiscal note is doing is explaining and articulating what those efforts, the level of those efforts might be within state agencies. It's important to note that the existing expertise that exists within the state agencies would be necessary for putting together these plans and responding to what the bill's requiring, and it would take away from other activities, other core functions that those agencies are doing, that those staff are doing.
Ms. Weber, is this something that the agencies have begun doing work on?
As Senator Daley indicated, there was a previous request for agencies to start doing some thinking and planning around this. In terms of the formality of what the bill's requiring, agencies have not put together a specific formal structure for all of the items that are indicated in the bill.
Do members have any questions? Senator Stumpf?
thank you, Madam Chair. Currently, are most of the federal funds that our state receives received as a result of a grant or a formula or some combination? I mean, like in the Department of Education, most recently we received a grant which was applied for. Do you have any idea what, I mean, are there the majority of the federal funds that we receive, are they just given to the states as a formula, kind of like LGA is in Minnesota, or would it be as a result of some state applying for these funds?
Ms. Weber, did you want to try and answer that? Otherwise, our fiscal analyst, Mr. Gustafson, can help you with that, too.
Either way is fine.
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf, the short answer is they come in both varieties, but the vast majority of the amount of money comes through formulas. And the single largest federal item in the state's budget is the federal match for Medicaid spending. So our medical assistance program, we make a payment to a provider, a hospital, a physician, a nursing home, and the federal government pays half of that bill. That's the largest single item of federal funding in the state budget. There are other formula-driven federal funds, I think particularly in transportation, but you're also correct that there are numerous competitive grants that state agencies apply for. So they come in both varieties, but in terms of volume of dollars, formula would be the formulaic funding is the predominant amount.
And Madam Chair, in the grant process, there's usually a very good exchange between the agency or whoever the responsible local party would be or state party and the federal party. In the formula area, if you trace the payment that goes to the provider, let's say the hospital or whoever, does the state write the check for the full amount to that provider and then is reimbursed by the federal government, or does the state pay a portion of it and then the federal government pay a portion of it? How does that exactly work?
Mr. Gustafson.
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf, in the case of medical assistance payments, the state pays the full amount and receives reimbursement. in a matter of days, I think 2 to 3 days later is typical, where the federal government then will reimburse the state for that outlay. And I don't know how pervasive that is. I think that is more often than not the case where the state government will make the payment and seek reimbursement for a valid expense from the federal government.
Okay. And Madam Chair, just a final question.
Senator Stone.
That's why we do need that cash flow account and possibly that reserve fund to kind of float the federal government's share of the payment for a day or two. Is that right?
Mr. Gustafson.
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, there are myriad reasons why the state needs to have cash balances, and there are many factors that contribute to the monthly or daily imbalance of receipts and expenses, and payments and receipts from the federal government are certainly one of those. Obviously, the nature of when major state revenues come in, particularly tax revenues, and when major payments go out around school aids, local government payments are significant contributing factors as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, Senator Dilley, appreciate your work on this thing. I'm glad you made reference to what I think was appalling to everybody in the country, and that was that the idiocy of the debt ceiling debate during the summer and what the ramifications that might have been, obviously, for states throughout the country, much less the economy of the United States. But relative to the bill in front of us, how do you envision this working? Will the agencies prepare a line item as part of the budget? And what's your anticipation as to how this will actually be presented to the committees?
Senator Daley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Cohen, as part of the budget process, I think in my conversations with MMB, they can incorporate these five items: identifying the fiscal risks to the agency, estimating the impact of those risks, recommending strategies to adjust to and minimize those risks, 4, recommending a plan to monitor leading indicators, and recommending specific steps to take if necessary. As they go through that process, since they're already having discussions about the plans for that upcoming biennium, the discussions we had were that they could incorporate this, and as Ms. Weber mentioned, there is an opportunity cost to do this, but it's minimal to the degree that they're already having these kinds of conversations, and managers, leaders in those organizations can have these discussions and come up with answers to these five items. The first time that they do it, it will be the most onerous. It'll be the most difficult. Subsequent years, it's just a matter of going through it, seeing what's changed to it since the previous year. But the first time through will be the toughest.
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, Senator Daley, maybe I didn't ask my question clearly enough because I read the bill as well. So I understand what's in the bill in terms of the language, but I'm wondering about the process. And maybe the question is better directed to Ms. Weber. But, for instance, let's use Human Services, which probably is the most impacted agency if there's a problem with the federal government. Would the Department of Human Services come with an addendum to their budget presentation before Senator Hand's committee and have a report saying that if there were to be a federal shutdown for a period of 2 weeks or if there were no federal budget passed, this would be the impact that we would have on our budget, on hospitals in Minnesota, nursing homes in Minnesota, so that there's an addendum report or is it incorporated into the budget? So I don't know if you can answer that or Ms. Weber can answer that at this point.
Ms. Weber, would you want to, or do you have you or someone else who came with from MMB?
Madam Chair, perhaps I could explain the approach or what was assumed in the fiscal note. So, Senator Cohen, what was assumed in the fiscal note is that MMB would develop a standard template as part of the biennial budget process in which agencies would describe in a narrative fashion, respond to each of the items that are in Senator Daley's bill. in terms of the cost then that agencies indicated they would incur, they did also include assumptions about needing to assess what the impact on state legislation might be and whether or not they as agencies needed to bring forward legislation in response to what might happen under a federal government's inability to or reduction in payments.
So it's they're actually going to have something that we could even show our congressmen to show the negative impact that a potential shutdown at their level could have on us. I imagine that, you know, it would be kind of laying it out as to how it would impact Minnesota.
Madam Chair, whether or not, I don't know that that would specifically be itemized within the budget documents. The budget documents would explain what the risk factors are, what the mitigation strategies are, and then there may be additional work required of agencies to bring forward specific legislative proposals.
Okay, thank you. Senator Daley?
Thank you, Madam. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to mention to you and the members that I feel there's a careful balance that we need to take on this. I'm not looking to spend inordinate amounts of time, money, energy, efforts on this, and I don't want to worry unnecessarily about things that may never happen. What I see is an increasing inability at the federal level to provide stable financial management and for us to have prudent, proactive contingency planning measures in place so we know in advance what steps we might need to take.
Thank you, Senator Daley. Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Welcome. My name is Margaret Kelly. I'm a state budget director with Minnesota Management and Budget. And I just wanted to make a few comments. We have been talking with Senator Daley. Appreciate the change that he did make in the bill, eliminating the wording of insolvency, and wanted to relay to you all some of the comments we have made to him in terms of our concern about placing this language within the context of the biennial budget document itself. We are in favor of planning. We are in favor of risk management reduction strategies. And we did lead the efforts for the governor in terms of determining amongst agencies impacts to the state budget and to services the state provides when we came to the proverbial brink in the last year twice in terms of federal funding. And so we do see ourselves playing a strong role in that, but we are concerned in terms of putting this in the context of the biennial budget document. What we currently do have in the document is a federal fund summary that does state previous funding, current biennium funding, and anticipated future funding, which would be an opportunity to indicate changes that departments see in their federal grants. And we could highlight or provide more context for agencies to describe risks that they see. But creating this process, this risk management process, we would see it more aligned with COOP planning, continuity of operations planning that agencies do, and not necessarily something that is aligned with the biennial budget document, adding that layer of complexity within that document. We do plan to continue to talk with Senator Daley about it.
Well, thank you, Ms. Kelly. Is there any other discussion? Senator Bonner?
Madam Chair, Ms. Kelly, I guess I'm still left not understanding what's the downside of putting it in there in terms of, you know, these things seem to change pretty quickly, and we work on a biennial budget basis. So, and my experience in the corporate world is we always had to have a downside budget, a conservative, and then a go for. So we always did three budgets. So I still don't understand the hesitancy exactly.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, the biennial budget document is prepared once every 2 years. Mm-hmm. And as we experienced this last year, twice in the last year, when we were not in the process of preparing a biennial budget document, the document had already been prepared, was already sitting in front of you, we needed to do this risk planning. And so I just think that because we do need to be flexible, we do need to be nimble, that we shouldn't be as prescriptive and limited to the biennial budget document, and that that may not be the best place for it to reside.
Ms. Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Kelly, where would you like to see this language reside?
Ms. Kelly.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonhoff, I think that the language should allow for greater flexibility for departments to do this as a part of their continuity of operations planning.
Ms. Kelly, is that something that committee chairs and legislators so regularly review? I guess part of this is getting information to us as well, where at a site where we would find it easily accessible. I think that's maybe why it's been brought forward, so that we also know what's available and what the planning is, what the risks are. When we hear the talk about a potential federal government shutdown, we're trying to assess what it means to us. So how would it best be given to us if not through this process?
Madam Chair, that is one of the same questions Senator Daniel had, and I agree that if the issue is around communication of information, that we could talk about how to best communicate that information rather than putting a prescriptive process within the biennial itself. And that is something that I've agreed to continue to talk with them about in terms of how we could better communicate that information.
Madam
okay,
Chair.
Thank you. Senator Stump.
Maybe the best place would be in the an addendum to the forecasts that come out. I mean, we're using the forecast as kind of a revenue projection for the state, but in a sense that there are many factors that go into the forecast, but you know, not specific to the federal government, but more the overall economy. Maybe this could be kind of an attachment to the forecast.
Senator Perry?
Madam Chair, I was just going to move the bill. We're ready.
Okay. And certainly there's still some time if you wanted to make some sort of an amendment before it gets to the floor and have that prepared. I think the main point is we want the information, and where it ends up is not as important as that it's easily accessible to us. And so if there has to be some tweak as to where it will actually show up, but I think we're looking for this type of information. So if there's no other discussion, Senator Perry has moved that Senate File 1600 as amended be recommended to pass and be sent to the floor. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be sent to the floor. Thank you, Senator
Chair.
Daley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
And members, our next meeting will be on Tuesday. The legislative auditor is coming out with a report, I think it might be today, on fiscal notes, and we will have an opportunity to hear that presentation on Tuesday morning. Senator Perry?
Madam Chair, can I just real quickly remind our committee, if you haven't been over to the National Guard Armory, please do so. I was there this morning early. The event over there goes on until 3 o'clock. It's for legislators and their staff. Go take a look at what your National Guard Armory is doing for all of us here in the state, and it is really an interesting setup. So it's at the National Guard Armory on Cedar.
Yes, and since we are completed 25 minutes early, you might have a little time to do it before your next appointment. So with that, our meeting is adjourned.